Thank you all for coming. We're starting a new series, a two-part series today called The Hero Within. All these are based on the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, whose form you see there on the chair and in a smaller shape on the altar there. He's the founder, Acharya, of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which has 400 branches all over the world, including a branch in Spanish Fork, Utah. So it's really everywhere, isn't it? The Hero Within. According to a recent Gallup poll, kids between the ages of 13 and 18 were asked if there's any adult after which they would model their behavior, and 51% said they didn't know any adult that they'd like to model their life or their behavior after. One of the big heroes, superheroes, when I was growing up was George Reeves, who played Superman on TV. Unfortunately, he committed suicide. That's kind of hard for your hero worship. One wonders, how could a hero commit suicide? And it was hard to believe at my tender age that someone I'd looked up to so much would have killed himself. In a book called The Hero, American Style, by William Fishwick, he's quoted as saying, "People are ineffective without leaders. The search for paragons is inherent in human nature." Social critic Marja Manns goes a little further. She says, "Unless we have some image of human greatness, of human excellence to build on, we shall find it difficult to be animated by great dreams. We will only be moles burrowing in the darkness." Heroes, and this is a picture of Krishna as he manifested himself 5,000 years ago, wrestling with a dangerous killer named Chanura in the arena of Kamsa. Heroes shape our lives, they help define our character, they clarify our values, and they point to what life is all about. Our hero in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Srila Prabhupada. He came to America at the age of 70, at an age when most people would have retired. We have a lot of senior citizen tours here. Some of them have diabetes and they have problems with feeling in their feet. Some of them have had hip replacements and knee replacements. They can't even make it up the stairs here. We do have an elevator also for them, which we're happy to make available. But yet, I want every time I see someone struggling with the stairs, I think of our spiritual master at the age of 70 who went halfway around the world with no money, not knowing anybody in America, with the intention of starting an International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And the four basic principles that you had to follow in order to become his disciple, the foundation, the clergy of this new movement, had to follow these four principles. And this is in the mid-60s. So just picture this. An old man arriving in the mid-60s where people had buttons that said question authority, don't trust anyone over 30. It's a 70-year-old man coming in the mid-60s. And he's asking those who would like to be his disciples and purify themselves and advance in spiritual life to give up four things. Imagine this in the 60s. No illicit sex in the 60s, right? Free love, right? Right? No gambling, no intoxication in the LSD 60s, right? The Timothy Leary 60s, no intoxication. Really popular platform, right? Destined to get a lot of votes, isn't it? Right? And no meat eating. That's always a tough one, whether it's the 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s. And yet, he was recognized as a hero by 5,000 young people, all of whom gave up those habits in order to become his initiated disciples and to get closer to him. And beneath all of those sacrifices that they made, the motivation to be like him, to model their lives after him. Can we help you there, Hanuman? Just wait until you're done. The diary of history, the story of history, is the story of heroes. You know, who founded America? It didn't just happen. It's not just a historical fact. People did it. Heroes did it. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, so on and so forth. Greece, I remember reading about Greece. Manlius the left-handed, you know, he stuck his hand into fire rather than compromise his ideals. Heroes are the personification of our ideals. They are the embodiment of our highest values. They are the stars that guide us upward. A society writes its diary by naming its heroes, and as individuals, we do the same. We had a weekend retreat here. About 12 people spent the weekend with us for a yoga retreat, and one of them was Kathy Davis. Her sister, Karen, is an archivist at the Mayo Clinic. And her husband, who is an Indian, is a gastroenterologist specialist with the Mayo Clinic. Mayo Clinic is the most specialized and exalted, revered clinic in the world, and there are literally tens of thousands of applications from young doctors to get hired at the Mayo Clinic, and they can only take a few. And so throughout the years, they're wrestling with ways of culling, of deciding, not who's good and who's bad, but amongst the cream of the cream, you know, the Harvard magna cum laude graduates and all like that. Who do you pick? You know, when you got a room full of those types of people, that caliber people, and who do you pick? How do you distinguish one from another? And there was one question they came up with, which is asked in every job application interview. And more than any other question, this reveals what type of a personality it is. They asked the question, tell me who your heroes are. The answer to that question gives more insight into the character and personality of the applicant than any other question. It's the best clue to your values and your character. So I'd like to ask you, the same question. Who's your hero? Do you have a hero? Do you have a North Star after which you get direction and guidance in your life? Do you have someone that you'd like to be? Someone whose values resonate with you? Someone who challenges you to be more than you could be, to be more than you are, to rise above yourself, to exceed yourself. Yeah. Tell me who your heroes are, and I'll tell you where you're headed in life. And if you haven't thought about this, if this isn't something that you've given a lot of thought about, then you just really don't know what's important in your life. If you don't have people who personify your ideals, then you don't really have ideals, and you don't really have anything important in your life. You're just drifting. You don't know what to live for because you haven't personified it. You know, you could have read all about Krishna before Prabhupada came. You still can. You can go to college libraries and you can read all kinds of academic texts about Krishna. In fact, at the time when Prabhupada came to America, there were 700 different translations in English of the Bhagavad Gita, which means Song of God, the knowledge that Krishna spoke 5,000 years ago. And yet, in spite of 700 translations of the Bhagavad Gita, the Song of God, there wasn't a single follower of Krishna. There wasn't a single Krishna conscious person. Because the theory, the academic aspect, is not inspirational. There's no one in the academic world who's writing about Krishna who models Krishna consciousness, who models devotion to Krishna, who personifies the purpose and the mandate that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita. So there wasn't a single devotee of Krishna. And when one pure devotee modeled what it's like, what are the fruits, what are the benefits, how does he walk, how does he talk, and when they saw, oh, this is what you become like when you follow the principles of the Bhagavad Gita, then Prabhupada initiated on the basis of those four aforementioned principles 5,000 young people. And they became his devoted followers, and they're still his followers to this day. You need to personify it. Abraham Maslow, a famous psychologist, he criticized modern psychology because it studies all kinds of mental aberrations, mental diseases. He says, if you want to have a psychology, a discipline of psychology that's going to do benefit to society, then don't just study abnormal behavior. Don't just study deviant personality paths. Study the great heroes. Study the people who have given and sacrificed themselves for others. Study archetypal heroes. And by studying this, you develop the psyche. You develop the collective consciousness of the country. And then you have citizenry who are willing to sacrifice the individual self for the betterment of the whole. We wouldn't be here today if our founding fathers had sat behind iPods all day long and were on Facebook all day long, you see, and we're interested in listening to AC/DC, we would not be here where we are. We would not be enjoying the advantages that we have. And we would not be inspired by hero figures that in fact did sacrifice to make this country. And in order for this country to continue to be great, you know, nothing plops in your lap. Nothing's an automatic. Nothing's a given. So unless the inspiration is there, unless the role models are replaced or updated, we're not going to continue to enjoy the benefits that we do at this present moment. In these archetypical, ideal, virtuous, heroic personalities, we find duty and pleasure to be the same thing, as is also work and play, self-interest and altruism. In his book, Towards the Psychology of Being, Maslow writes, "If we want to know the possibilities for spiritual growth or moral development in human beings, then I maintain that we can learn most by studying our most moral, ethical, or saintly people. They spontaneously tend to do right because that is what they want to do, what they need to do, what they enjoy, and what they continue to enjoy." One of the problems that we face is that the H word is too much abused. It's too much abused. It's too easy to be called, to be labeled a hero in our society. In the World Almanac, they asked 2,000 eighth graders who were their heroes. And every one of them named either an entertainer or an athlete as their heroes. Well, are they heroes or are they celebrities? And if they're celebrities rather than heroes, what's the difference between a celebrity and a hero? Well, celebrities make a splash. Heroes make a difference. Celebrities are all about image and fame. Heroes are about service and sacrifice. Celebrities want others to serve them. It's easy to become a celebrity. Just look at Survivor, you know, instant celebrity status from these reality shows. But it's not as easy to become a hero. It is said that when small men cast long shadows at the end of the day, you can know that the sun is setting on a culture. Prabhupada calls this decorations for a dead body. You have a body that's lying in a coffin, very nicely dressed in an expensive suit, got all the ribbons and the decorations and the awards and the newspaper articles that were written about that person, got his bowling trophy, you got his stock portfolio and all that. But what good does it do? What good does it do a dead body? What is the purpose? It's decorating a dead body. So is our society vitalized? Is it enlivened? Is it purposeful? Is it directional? Because of the presence of people who model these ideals? Because if it's not going anywhere, then it's just static and in its process of decomposition. Too many celebrities, not enough heroes. Anybody can be a hero. It's not about having big muscles or being adept on the athletic field or having good hands to catch a pass or smashing someone in the ring. It's about choices is what it is. And anyone who knows how to make the right choices can be a hero. Here's a hero, and we're going to come back to him in Vedic culture. This is Haridas Thakur. He's a hero. If you come to the Krishna Conscious Temple with any frequency, you'll hear about this great hero, Haridas Thakur. He conquered lust. He conquered anger. He conquered greed. He was so famous at being a conqueror of his senses. And the name for this in our culture is Swami. Have you ever heard the term Swami? Anybody? Swami. Swami means one who conquers or controls the senses. You look at a dog. A dog is never going to be a Swami. Because the dog is looking here and looking there and looking there. A dog may be running, you know, 35 miles an hour in one direction, and a certain scent comes across his nose, something that attracts him, and then literally, his nose will pivot and his whole body will just like screech around and then he'll be off in a different direction. That's not a Swami. Those senses are out of control. Something is attractive to touch or to see or to smell, and immediately there isn't any reticence at all. That's what it's all about. Just a bundle of senses seeking for gratification without any sort of moderation at all or temperance. On the other hand, Haridas Thakur was approached because some people were envious of his sterling reputation. One man named Ramachandra Khan said, "This Haridas Thakur, he's just chanting Hare Krishna and living in a solitary place, but he's young, he's good looking, he's handsome. He's just doing it for show. He's just doing it to get some name and fame. And I'm going to pop his bubble. So he gave a very famous, adept, and very young and good-looking prostitute a big sum of money. She said, go and conquer him with your charms, with your sweet words, with your fragrances and your perfumes. And when he succumbs to your charms, I'll have my men who are witnesses to his fall down, jump out of the bushes, and then we'll tell the world what a cheater he actually is. So naturally, she didn't come to him early in the morning or at noon. She came to him in the evening when the sun is setting. And she came with all kinds of unguents and perfumes on her body, beautifully dressed. And she sat down and she, you know, I mean, you don't need me to model that kind of behavior for you, do you? You know what I'm talking about. That's modeled everywhere. Every time you turn on the TV, the radio, look at the billboard, we know what I'm talking about, right? The question is, who resists it? Who looks at it and says, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to succumb. So she was there with every reason and all the abilities to knock down, you know, anybody. Just about it. Caesar, Napoleon, they all had their Josephines, they all had their Cleopatras. There's a statement that even the greatest hero, even the greatest world conqueror, even the greatest Caesars are conquered by the movement of a pretty girl's eyebrow. So are these really heroes? They may conquer the world, but they haven't conquered their senses. They have men, they have armies of archers, and their bow, you know, the bow is shaped like this, and they shoot their arrows, and they fell enemies all over the world. They just conquer country after country after country. But that brilliant general, strong and powerful and charismatic and leadership and a great strategist. See the bow here? See the bow? The handle? Like that? And the arrows are like, hello there. And they're down, man. They're down for the count. Like that, you know. So Haridas Thakur was a real hero because he had conquered. He had controlled his senses. And it's interesting because she came to him late one night and his vow was to chant 300,000 times, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And every 24-hour period he would chant that mantra 300,000 times. So she came to him late at night about 11 o'clock. She sat down and he said, if you will wait until I finish my rounds, then I will satisfy all your desires. And so she sat down, she bowed down before the sacred Tulsi, which shows a sort of innate piety on her. The Tulsi is very dear to Lord Krishna, and she waited. And Haridas chanted and chanted and chanted, and he said, he finished his round, but it's 11:59. He says, I can't do it tonight, but I'll try to chant quicker this next 24 hours, and I'll try and leave some time for us. So you come back tomorrow night. And so she said, okay. And she went back. And Ramachandra Khan said, is he ready? Is he ready? Shall I put my spies? Shall I bring my spies? And she says, no. Let me seduce him this night and then he'll be mine. He'll be in my pocket and then next night. So she came back the next night and he said, I'm almost finishing the rounds. Sat down. And he said, it's the end of the month. I had to chant a couple extra rounds. It's the end of the month, and darn it, I forgot that yesterday. I forgot to tell you, and I'm not going to be done. I'm just only going to be finished at midnight. By the way, he would sleep a half an hour during the day and take a half an hour for eating, if that. He says, I forgot, it's the end of the month. I'm so sorry. But look, come back tomorrow night, and I guarantee that all your desires will be fulfilled. So she said, okay. And then next evening, she's walking up the mountain. Tonight. No. And Haridas Thakur is chanting, and now she's been sitting three nights in a row, hearing the chanting and looking at this person. He's not like ordinary people. He's not like a dog. He's like a god. Because he's chanting the names of God. He has assumed the power of God. The power of resistance. He's got a higher taste from chanting the holy names of the Lord. And he's attached to eternal pleasure. And he has no interest in
the temporal pleasure of boy-girl relationships, which last a second and brings so much sorrow and misery and responsibility after it. She's looking at him and looking at the model of behavior that he is. And finally, Haridas Thakur looks at her and she takes off all her jewelry. She wipes the makeup off of her face. She scrubs the perfume. She takes off her alluring postures and dress. And she prostrates herself before him. And she confesses. She confesses the whole plot of Ramachandra Khan and the money and how she was paid and so on and so forth. And Haridas Thakur. And she says, I don't want to be like that anymore. You are my hero. I want to be like you. I don't want to be a prostitute, either to other men's money or to other men's desires. I don't want to be used. I want to take my destiny into my own hands. And that begins with being able to control your senses. And you are my hero. You are my ideal. And Haridas Thakur said, as far as that plot goes, I figured it out from the very first. And I had intended on leaving this spot 3 nights ago. But when you came to seduce me and you bowed down before the Tulsi, I saw the innate piety within your heart, and I felt that I could not abandon you. So I postponed my departure for 2 days, and I promised you I would fulfill your heart's desire. And now it's been done. That your innermost heart's desire was not to be used and to be abused by others who are interested in sense gratification and to be a slave to your own senses. But I thought that within 2 or 3 days that you, in my association and by hearing constantly the holy name of the Lord, I thought that you actually would have the change of heart, which we're seeing evidence today. And in fact, now all of your heart's desires will be fulfilled. So he left that place and she stayed in his stead. She stayed and occupied his hut and she began chanting day and night, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So imagine all over, the most famous prostitute in the whole area has now become a devotee. She was famous and people came from all over. And then she became a model. Having taken Haridas Thakur as her model, then she became a model. Prabhupada initiated between 1965 and 1977, 12 years, between the ages of 70 and 82, he initiated 5,000 disciples. And out of those 5,000 disciples that have remained true to their vows and faithful to their guru, about 60 have been given the nod by the governing board to then initiate and continue the disciplic succession. There are 2 of those initiated disciples of Srila Prabhupada, Radhana Swami and Jayapataka, who have each one in excess of 15,000 disciples, all of whom have given up illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, eating, and who work actively for the mission of Krishna consciousness. So they took Prabhupada as their model, and by being faithful and emulating his example, now they have even done more. Of course, they're in their youth and so on and so forth, in terms of changing people's lives because of their faithfulness and adherence to him. So this is hero. There's another example of the so-called heroes of this material world in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the example of Paranjana. Paranjana was a great, good-looking, stalwart, swashbuckling, eye-catching movie star, good-looking, and a king, rich to boot. And he was wandering through the forest, practicing his horsemanship and his archery one day, and he came upon a girl who looked quite possibly a lot like this girl. And it's described, the scene is described, Paranjana the hero became attracted by the eyebrows and smiling face of the very beautiful girl and was immediately pierced by the arrows of her lusty desires. It says that when a woman meets a man, she decides within the first 30 seconds whether she wants him or not. The man doesn't really have much to say because, they're men, right? says the stronger sex is weaker than the fairer sex because of the weakness of the stronger sex for the fairer sex. Did you get that? So anyway, when she smiled shyly, she looked very beautiful to Paranjana, who, although a hero, could not refrain from addressing her. A hero maybe in some limited sense of the word, but not a hero through and through. You get it? Although a hero. If he was a hero through and through, the although would not be there. He's just a hero, and he wouldn't address her. At least not inappropriately. Now this is funny. This is her response. Follow this with me. Oh, my dear hero, who in this world would not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, so beautiful, and so easily gotten. Paranjana married the girl. He became affectionate to her. He doted himself on her. He was thinking of her at the time of death. And guess what? As the air carries aromas, the Bhagavad Gita says, so we carry our different conceptions of life from one body to another. Whatever is most prominent in our consciousness and our thoughts at the time of death determines our next life. Paranjana was devoted not to virtue, not to high-mindedness, not to self-sacrifice, but he was devoted to the body of his wife, which is good in and of itself. There's nothing wrong. Don't mistake me. We're not suggesting that you not be attracted, that you not be a good husband and not be a family man, but it should not be in the center of your life. It should not comprise the core of your being. It should not be your dominant life principle. Not if you're going to be a hero and model good behavior and do good to yourself and do good to others. So he became a woman in his last life. And because it's an allegorical story, and so we can follow, you know, for some people that are a little hard, you know, slow to follow, in his next life, in his previous life, he's called Paranjana. So in this next life, he became known as Paranjani. See? And he took birth as a woman. Okay. Then, in that incarnation as a woman, she got married and was again very attached to the husband. The husband died, and then here is Paranjani by the funeral pyre of her husband, and she's thinking of her husband, and a swan comes by. Beautiful, beautiful swan. And Paranjani says, who are you? She's crying and crying and crying and crying, and she's just totally grief-stricken. She's totally devastated. Her husband's dying. He's being consumed in the funeral. And this swan happens by on a nearby river. Who are you? And the swan, don't you recognize me? I'm your old and dear friend. You know, I was with you as Paranjana when you become attracted to the girl. And when you took your next birth as Paranjani, I was with you. And now you're lamenting over the death of your husband, and I'm still with you, and I thought I should give you a word of advice. I am God who dwells within your heart. I am the super soul who is your eternal friend and overseer and permitter, who, even though you choose to ignore me and go from life to life to life and from attachment to attachment, because of uncontrolled senses, I accompany you. I never cut you loose. I never reject you. I never abandon you. I always wait for that moment when I may get through to you and give you the tools whereby you break the cycle of repeated birth and death. And I thought that having been a man and having been a woman and now crying and being full of grief for the loss of your husband, I thought that this might be a good time to appear before you and say a word or two about the futility of it, the endless repetition of it, how what you're doing is chewing the chewed. You've been there, you've done that. You've been a man hundreds of times in your previous lives who is attached to his wife or girlfriend. You've been a girlfriend, a girl in hundreds and hundreds of previous lives who was attached to a man. And in many human forms of life, you are attached to animals or to eating flesh. And you revolve because of your attachments, because of your failure to control your senses. We're not talking about denying the senses or eradicating the senses. We're not Buddhists who stare at a rock for 6 hours. But a measure of control is required. Because of uncontrolled senses, you have been revolving in this material world for thousands and thousands of births. Sometimes as a man, sometimes as a woman, sometimes as a king, sometimes as a beggar, sometimes as a dog, and sometimes as a demigod. So why don't you take this moment when you're keenly aware of the mortality of all flesh, why don't you take this moment to chant the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and taste the eternal. You've tasted illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, meat eating in millions of lifetimes, in millions of species. And that's all it is. It's just the same things over and over and over and over. He says, why don't you now break out of that cycle and taste the nectar, the eternal nectar of the Lord's holy names? And there are many benefits from this, the least of which is that you begin to be self-contained. You begin to derive pleasure from the self, from the spiritual self, rather than looking for pleasure by the action and interaction of the senses and the sense objects. There is unlimited pleasure, a fount, a geyser, a well, you see, within you. And you need simply to tap it and all your problems of life will be solved. The musk deer is a particular type of deer in India. When the spring comes, the musk deer smells this intoxicating aroma of musk. It says, I must find the source of that. I must find the source of that. It is so delicious and aromatic and fragrant. I must find the source of that. And so the deer runs up the mountain and down the valleys, this way and that way and this way and that way, and exhausts itself, sometimes even to the point of death, trying to find the source of that intoxicating aroma of musk. But why do you think it's called the musk deer? Any thoughts on that? Because the musk comes from its own belly button. But being an animal, it never figures that out. So there's a term, dvipada pasu, two-legged animals. You want to be a two-legged human being or a two-legged animal? Because the difference is, the one who figures out that eternal knowledge and bliss is within me, as God is within me, is indeed a human being. Comes to the human level of consciousness. And that one who perennially and chronically pursues happiness through externals is an animal. Dvipadapas, not a chaturpada, not a four-legged animal, but a two-legged animal. We'll end there, part one of a two-part series called The Hero Within. Have you any questions or comments?